When I was growing up, we would take the long car trip to visit my grandparents in West Virginia about 3 or 4 times a year. And the drive from South Carolina to them took about 8 hours. And my parents only ever made one cassette tape for road trips. So we listened to the same one again and again, and I became mighty familiar with the playlist, as you might imagine. And one of the tunes that I heard countless times sitting in the back seat was a pretty heavy one by Randy Newman called God's Song. And I don't know if you've ever heard it, but I'm going to share some of the lyrics with you. The Christians and the Jews were having a jamboree. The Buddhists and the Hindus joined on satellite TV. They picked their 4 greatest priests and they began to speak. They said, "Lord, a plague is on the world. Lord, no man is free. The temples that we built to you are tumbled into the sea. Lord, if you won't take care of us, won't you please, please let us be?" And the Lord said, and the Lord said, "I burn down your cities, how can you not see? I take from you your children and you say, how blessed are we? You all must be crazy to put your faith in me. That's why I love mankind." So for years, when people asked me, "Do you believe in God?" I would picture this disinterested, cruel God, and I would answer defiantly and proudly, "No, I don't." So I was startled to find during my first year in seminary that when I said God had no place in my life, no place in how I understood existence, I started to feel like I was being dishonest. I identified as an atheist, and as I tried telling this to my classmates, the words suddenly felt uncomfortable. I found myself skipping over that part of my identity in conversation. I started thinking that sometime maybe I should sit down and get clearer about what I think about God. And before long, this being seminary, I got the opportunity. I was assigned the task of writing just that. How do you understand God? What are your thoughts about God? And the assignment tied me in knots. Finally, alone in my apartment in the middle of the night, I began to cry. I decided to just sit down and breathe deeply and stop trying to come up with theorems for proving or disproving the existence of something that suddenly seemed beyond my intellectual understanding. And as I sat there breathing, I began to feel like I was being held. No flashes of light, no voice. Just the overwhelming sense that something was holding me. A lot has happened between then and now, but I keep trying to let myself experience this something that holds me more often. When I'm alone, I even try to say the word God out loud. I haven't decided if it's comfortable for me or if it feels right. And to tell you the truth, this is a little strange, but when I'm alone, saying the word God out loud reminds me a little bit of the first time I said a curse word as a child. I was a really well-behaved kid, and I remember taking a deep breath, making sure I was alone, and then cursing. I felt nervous and empowered. There was a sense of uncertainty and exhilaration all at once. At this moment in my life, that's what saying the word God aloud is a little bit like, an unfamiliar, powerful word. I don't think that the word God is perfect, but of course, it's understandable that as Unitarian Universalists, there are those of us who find meaning in that word. The word God is like a stone that gets its shape from countless hands that have touched it for generations. Hands reaching out in worry, reaching out seeking comfort, gratitude, reaching out in wonder, hands seeking strength or clarity. And, of course, as Unitarian Universalists, it's understandable that there are those of us who find no meaning in the word God, who are frustrated or even angered by the word. The word God has been used to justify all manner of cruelties. The word God has been used to stifle research, discovery, curiosity, knowledge, freedom. It's been used to deny our shared humanity. But even putting the word God aside with all its issues, we're still left with the problem of belief. These days when someone asks, "Do you believe in God?" I still don't know what to say. Perhaps this is because it really isn't about belief. Perhaps that question misses the point. Because why spend time trying to prove or disprove something that I experience, something that I feel? Even if I have trouble naming it, I recognize the divine, the holy, the mysterious, the expansive, and the radiant when I hear a story about it or hear it described. In her book, Big Magic, Elizabeth Gilbert writes about the creative process of the poet Ruth Stone. Stone experienced inspiration as a force of its own, something outside of herself that she was in conversation with. When she lived in rural Virginia, she spent long hours working in the fields alone. And Gilbert writes, Ruth would sometimes hear a poem coming toward her, hear it rushing across the landscape at her like a galloping horse. And whenever this happened, she knew exactly what she had to do. She would run like hell toward the house, trying to stay ahead of the poem, hoping to get a piece of paper and a pencil fast enough to catch it. That way, when the poem reached her and passed through her, she would be able to grab it and take dictation, letting the words pour forth onto the page. Gilbert continues, sometimes, however, she was too slow and she couldn't get the paper and pencil in time. At those instances, she could feel the poem rushing right through her body and out the other side. It would be in her for a moment, seeking a response, and then it would be gone before she could grasp it, galloping away across the earth, as she said, searching for another poet. What is it exactly that Ruth Stone could hear coming toward her? What is it that rushed through her body? What offered her the chance to capture words on a page and left in search of another if she did not respond fast enough? Even if we have trouble naming the holy, we have, I hope, each of us experienced joy. The late writer Artis Whitman once collected descriptions of the ways in which people talked about their experience of joy. One description came from the psychologist Abraham Maslow, who said that joy is a feeling that we have glimpsed the essence of things, the secret of life, as if veils had been pulled aside. In artist Whitman's collection of joy, there is also the story of a woman walking along at a beach at dusk, looking out over the darkening ocean. Whitman writes that the woman was overtaken by joy when she made out the image of an anchored fishing boat, and in it the figure of a man. After a while, she felt an intense and glowing sense of oneness with that silent figure. It was as though sea and sky and night and those two solitary human beings were united in a kind of profound identity. After studying her collection of joyous experiences, Whitman concluded that joy is the feeling that we have touched the hem of something far beyond ourselves. And she adds, having known it myself, I have known in a flash of deep illumination that there is in the universe a light, a stuff, a web, a substance in company with which one can never be lonely. What to make of these descriptions of joy as something that visits us from beyond? Some invisible web that connects human being to human being. Joy as something that existed before I did and will go on existing long after me. The Jane Kenyon poem we heard earlier, entitled Briefly It Enters and Briefly It Speaks, it. What is the it that she is naming? The something that sits with the hungry child and is present in the gate and the working hinge. I am water rushing to the wellhead, filling the pitcher until it spills. It could be abundance. I am the patient gardener of the dry and weedy garden. Is it tenacity or perseverance? I am there in the basket of fruit presented to the widow. Is the it that briefly enters and briefly speaks compassion? Perhaps part of the problem is trying to identify as either atheist or theist, as one who does not experience God or as someone who does. There may be fewer and fewer of us that fit in one category of the other with certainty and clarity. More and more people seem to fall somewhere in between or beyond the paradigm of none or all. I don't believe in a puppet master God who doles out irrational punishments on a whim, but I feel held in existence. My gut tells me that there is something more behind the logistics of everyday life. an energy, an aliveness, a something more. Maybe we don't have to be certain today. Maybe we don't have to know or be able to articulate exactly what we feel or think about God just now, or the mystery that that word stands for. As Pico Iyer says, the opposite of knowledge isn't always ignorance. It can be wonder or possibility. He says, in life I've found it's the things I don't know that often bring me closer to everyone around me. Blessed be. Amen.